Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 1 of Rails Network. Whoever said it would be easy lied. And let me just say, they definitely lied.
Welcome to Rails Network. Whoever said it would be easy lied. Where blockchain dreams come true, right after debugging nightmares. Let's build.
If you think blockchain technology is all about fast transactions and shiny new tokens, well, think again. You guys are probably wondering, what does it even take to build on blockchain? Well, it takes innovation, it causes tons of frustration, way too many late nights, and definitely too much coffee. But with that said, for this podcast, just to level set you guys, we're going to be talking about real stuff. None of that marketing talk, none of that say what you want to hear jargon. We're talking about bugs that don't quit, pivots you don't see coming, and finally when they come, all those juicy, juicy milestones that make everything worth it. It doesn't even matter if you're a developer, a crypto enthusiast, or you're just curious about what it takes to build in the Web3 space. If you've ever wondered what it took to build these apps, to build on the blockchain, you're definitely in the right place. Buckle up, we're here to share some stories, drop some knowledge, and have a few laughs along the way. Let's get into it. All right. So, I know a lot of you guys know the story, but hopefully we have a few listeners here that's never heard it before. So let's rewind, let's take a step back, let's take a trip down memory lane, back to March 2021. A lot of you know what this date means, but for us, it's when this crazy journey began. So we're just a bunch of normal guys, all working our jobs, talking shop, trading crypto, and then we thought of something. We looked at the tools that we had access to in Canada, the exchanges we had access to in Canada, and the task at hand for what we needed to do to get our crypto from point A to point B after getting our fiat from point A to point Z. And that's a problem. It shouldn't be so difficult to kind of get your crypto where it needs to be. It shouldn't be so difficult to kind of get your funds where they need to be before you can trade it. We saw a gap in the industry. Exchanges that were either fully decentralized or exchanges that were fully centralized. But we figured, why not both? So that's where the idea came to develop a hybrid, centralized, and decentralized ecosystem. It makes sense. Sounds easy. But guess what? If it was, we wouldn't have named the show Whoever Said It Would Be Easy Lied. Just like that, we got to work. What can go wrong? We had a dream in our heads. We had a roadmap in our hands. We were amped and fired up. Our community was brewing. Everything was going right. Well, step one, the most important step, hire a development team. Well, that's kind of what went wrong. How can that go wrong, right? What can go wrong with hiring a development team? Well, the goal was to always hire a team locally in Toronto, for most of us. Some of us had other plans. What we ended up doing, though, was hiring a team out in Ukraine. Usually that's okay. Outsourcing your team as a startup is usually more cost-effective, and it's more efficient, especially because you can hire a team that's niched into what you're looking for. We gave these guys very crystal-clear instructions and thought, boom, in a year, we'll have exactly what we envisioned. Fast forward a year, what did we get? Well, let's just say it didn't go as planned. Imagine walking into a Lambo dealership, meeting with your sales guy, picking your model, picking your color, choosing your trim, making your down payment, and then leaving, only to hear back from him after a year saying, hey buddy, your Lambo's ready for pickup. You go into the dealership, you don't see a Lambo parked there. You see a scooter with 3 flat tires. What we wanted was a non-custodial exchange, an experience for the user where they can get in, get out, without ever giving us custody of their funds, and just making the overall process as seamless as possible. What we ended up getting was a very cookie-cutter, out-of-the-box exchange, and we thought, hey, this is definitely not what we asked for. What's going on? Well, we found out later on that these guys basically slapped our label onto their white-label product and said, here's your exchange. So a year later, waiting for this team to kind of build out what we envisioned, basically gave us what they already had. What's the name of this show again? Yeah, from a community's perspective, you guys saw a white paper, you saw a development team, you know, grinding it out, you guys saw a roadmap, you guys saw constant updates, and these are all things we love to do. But when things go sideways like that, it becomes tricky. What do you do? How do you address the community? What do you do internally? How do you manage the expectation? And what do you do next? Well, for us, the answer was simple. Recalibrate, replan, and re-execute. Joining us on the podcast to shed his light on this process and what we went through as a team is none other than the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Chris Beckford.
Thank you for that amazing introduction, my good man. Though I personally wouldn't say legend. I mean, we all know how much of a legend you are in the community for your beard alone. I mean, let alone all the amazing work that you do for the community. So truly appreciate you. And what a great intro, right? Your intro gives everyone a great behind the scenes look at our journey leading up to the recalibration. And now at that point, we had one of two options, right? We tried to fix what wasn't working, or we pivot and you know, if we didn't pivot, then we probably would have got left in the dust, right? But as we pivoted, and we pivoted in a major way, right? Instead of forcing something that just wasn't clicking, we shifted our focus to building something that was truly our own. And here is where we enter Rails Network. So for starters, we needed our own blockchain, a place that we could really call home. So with that, we started with a simple EVM-compatible core just to get the ball rolling. But then came a real challenge, which we were looking for a consensus mechanism that actually worked for us and worked for what we envisioned. That's when we came up with proof of work by authority. Now, here's how we're going to break it down, right? Traditional proof of work, it's a free-for-all, you know, where the biggest miners win, essentially, right? Proof of stake, more of a popularity contest where the get richer, right? But proof of work by authority. Now, that's where we found the sweet spot in our consensus mechanism. So we put mining power in the hands of trusted experts who keep things running smoothly without sacrificing the security of a proof of work system, which in our eyes is a game changer in itself. Now, while we were busy building Rails Network, in parallel to that, we weren't just coding in a vacuum, right? We were actually teaming up with the University of Waterloo, and you might have heard that name. It's a pretty prestigious school in Canada, definitely the one that cranks out some of the brightest minds, the best engineers and researchers in the world, and we're truly proud of that partnership, you know. And entering that partnership, we asked ourselves one big question. You know, how do people actually learn about blockchain and crypto in a way that sticks? You know, not your traditional methods, because at the end of the day, they just weren't cutting it, right? Let's be honest here. So, you know, we built something better. You know, we develop an AI-driven gamified learning experience that adapts to each student. No more generic one-size-fits-all lessons, right? So it really understands who's behind that computer screen and caters that learning to you. And guess what? I mean, it worked. You know, it worked. We got amazing feedback and response from the school, not only from the university, but from consumers as well, too. Unfortunately, you know, we had to hit a little bit of a pause on that to focus on the rest of our DeFi ecosystem. But don't worry, it will be back on the books for 2025. Now, after countless hours of development, testing, and debugging, Rails Network mainnet was officially live. I mean, that was the biggest milestone for us, and what a great feeling it was for all the hard work that was put into it behind the scenes from our development team and a core team and even community input as well too. There was a lot that really went to it. Now, here's a little cool detail that you might not know. Our chain ID, it's not just a random number that we picked out of a hat, you know. It's actually the first initials of every core team member who poured their heart and soul and blood into this project. So, you know, this chain isn't just a product. It's personal. It's personal for us. It's personal for our community. And that's why, I mean, we love it so much. Now, launching our blockchain isn't the end all be all, and never was, and it never will be, right? It was just the beginning. You know, it was just the door opener for a lot more things that are to come and that are already out there in the environment. But, you know, we built an entire ecosystem around it. Let me give you a little bit of the snippets in terms of the highlights of what we're looking at right now. So let's start off with Rails Network. You already know Rails Network mainnet, the backbone of our community, our environment. We have our EVM bridge. We have our Rails DEX, where you can swap, you can trade, all within the comfort of the ecosystem. We have our Rails Cross Rails, where you can move SteamX seamlessly from PSC, Base, or Ethereum. We have our Rails Launchpad, where the newest projects just take off. Something important about our Launchpad too is the security aspect, right? Every project that are going through our Launchpad are highly vetted, and we hold ourselves accountable. We hold those projects coming into our ecosystem accountable. So, you know, safety is the name of the game, right? We also have our Rails Locker, where you can secure token and liquidity locking with built-in vesting. And we have our Rails Slide, a great fair way to distribute coins at the chain level. Now, there's one thing here, and it's not missing, but it's a piece. We have our Rails wallet. And trust me, We're making sure that it's worth the wait. With all this and many more things to come, not only from our team, but from participants on the blockchain building, we truly have set a foundation for something great here. And we're looking forward for what's to come in the months, in the years. It's going to be an enjoyable journey. Now, next up, I think we have Aaron on with us, who's going to take us through some of his development journey. And I'm really looking forward for him to share with you guys everything that's been going on. It's a jam-packed session today. Thank you, guys.
I bet you guys didn't know that about the chain ID. No man that I know could have said it better than Chris. Thank you, thank you, thank you for taking the time to explain the recalibration process, what it took as a team, why we had to do it, and to outline our decentralized ecosystem. Up next, we have none other than Mr. Aaron to guide us through his own development journey on blockchain technology. What, another developer talking about something other than Rails Network? And yeah, of course, this podcast is not just about Rails Network and Steam Exchange. Don't get me wrong, it would be great if you just took my word for it, but we definitely want you to experience information from developers all over the crypto ecosphere. We want you to hear about their hurdles, their milestones, their processes, their successes, their accomplishments, their everything. Let's get into it.
All right, let's talk shop. We've got a blockchain dev here who's seen it all. The bugs, the breakthroughs, and maybe a few too many late night deploys. Let's chat.
Hello?
Hey, Aaron, how are you doing, man?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, of course. I was pumped. So I'm excited for what you guys are doing. So I'm excited to chat.
Right on. Before we get into it, maybe you can take some time just briefly introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your journey and how you got into blockchain development.
Yeah, I've been in blockchain dev for a while now. I think like I'm ancient when it comes to like blockchain life cycles. I'm supposed to have either rug pulled at this point or like moved on. But I got back into it. I got into it back in 2017. So I originally was doing dev work. I was doing some freelance stuff, working with some businesses to build out custom WordPress plugins. That's how I originally got into dev. Then I stumbled across blockchain dev, made some cool connections, worked with the people that were way smarter than me, and ended up building out infrastructure for a chain called Clayton, which is now called Kaya. They merged with like Finsha. So this was ages ago. I built out snapshot tooling, which back then was a lot harder to do than it is today, sure. Or at least we thought it was, yeah. And we ended up launching an NFT project, fastest ever on their chain to sell out, and we held that title. We still do. And now, you know, Clayton doesn't exist. They merged with that other chain. But ended up doing some other cool stuff, met some pretty awesome people, built out some tech with, like, Shonduras from Space Station. So if you are familiar with Space Station Gaming and that whole ecosystem, we built out this like physical NFT quarter machine. Nike flew me out in April of 2023. I built out this like 36 monitor setup for them with an infrared hand scanner, which is wicked cool.
See, that's the thing. Fun. You know, everyone thinks that, you know, we're kind of like a one trick pony when it comes to developing, right? But developers usually have a pretty strong background in, you know, IT stuff, you know, and I think most developers start their journey, you know, as, you know, a help desk or a desk side technician type scenario. I think I can resonate with a lot of people that that code, that tell me that, yeah, man, I used to set up desks for this company or that company. Is that also what your journey looked like when you started?
A little bit. I did semi-service desk. It was like risk and compliance internally for like healthcare. And then I got poached pretty quickly by like financial company to do more senior risk and compliance stuff, which was super bureaucratic. But yeah, I originally was taking, I think the first thing I did was take phone calls from doctors, like trying to get into their password, right? Yeah, like they've lost their password. So that's funny.
Yeah. So I guess the biggest question I would have is, you know, before you started developing and coding, you know, what inspired you? What was your moment, your spark that kind of said, hey, this is what I want to do. I'm going to start building things. You know, what was that moment that inspired you to do that?
Typically, I think it's what, like, you have an itch that you want to scratch that you can't find a solution to scratch it, right? And for me, that was, I wanted to learn how to do things, and I, like, was constantly, like, downloading apps to learn how to play instruments. I was downloading apps to learn how to code. I didn't go to school for coding. I ended up getting a degree in IT, like a bachelor's and master's, just to legitimize it. And then I taught at university, but that was just because I wanted to try to change it from within.
And that's usually the case, right? Like usually developers, you know, didn't go to school to code. I also find that, just people that we've worked with mm-hmm. on Rails Network and Steam Exchange, developers that went to school, they're not as strong as developers that kind of self-taught.
Yeah, the computer science fundamentals, I think, are a little bit, you don't need to know them as much as you used to, right? Efficiency is there, but we have AI. It's 2025. You can say, hey, how do I make my code more efficient? And it's like, seriously, most of the devs that I work with now, I tell them it's okay to use AI. Just make sure, you adhere to code standards and things work, right? Like, I don't mind at all. The best devs will use AI. The best devs are lazy. That's what I always tell people. They figure out how to cut corners and do it well.
Oh, for sure. You know how many times I've come across a bug, and my code base is so large that identifying that bug is like needle in a haystack. It's not like it used to be. Like just 2 or 3 years ago, before we had AI, you would have to literally sit there and try to figure out where that semicolon's missing, where that comma's missing, what you did wrong, where your math went wrong. But now you can just plug in all your scripts into, ChatGPT, DeepSeek, whatever you want to use, and it'll tell you, hey, this is what you did wrong, and this is what our recommendation is. The key thing is, the key thing is the recommendation is usually pretty good. It's okay, but it'll get your code working, but it's not going to get your code optimized. So I guess that's where the experience aspect kicks in.
Yeah, there was something where I need to spin up a loader literally last night, and I was like, hey, can you make me a loader? And I was like, oh, I don't like this. And you tweak it a little bit, and you know where you're going to tweak it. But there's even IDEs now called, there's one called Zed, where it's just like their entire value prop is that they're built for you to use AI when you code, right? And there's a bunch of integrations to Visual Studio Code, but to actually just say we know you're going to use AI, we're building our entire product around that as a developer. It's wild, man. If there's no better time than now to try to learn how to dev with all the tools out there and all the support, and then you can leverage AI to kind of teach you if you know what you're doing.
For sure. So in your intro, you mentioned your quarter machine. So that's kind of the I think when people think of you, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, and I apologize if this offends you, but I think when people think of you, they definitely tie you to that quarter machine because it was award winning, right? So, do you consider that your most exciting project that you ever worked on?
I'd say that's the one that opened the most doors. It was the most stressful. I hadn't done a lot of activations at that point. And if you're a dev, most devs, when you think about a dev, you're like, oh, in a room, no lights, coding. But my whole dev life has not been like that. I've been very front facing and I'm very involved. And to do an activation, that was my first big activation at VCon back in 2022. And we did we moved 553 transactions at a quarter ETH in 2022. So it was 550K in 2 days. People were coming up to the machine. We had a line that was going we were overshadowing Dead Fellas, I remember. And I was sorry, to Betty. That was Betty when she came out as Betty. And we were I'm so sorry. We need better line management. So yeah, I think that was the one that opened the most doors for me. So you probably nailed it. And it definitely got the most hype at the time. And so, but definitely the most exciting was the Nike one. That was with Murakami. It was wicked cool. Like I said, 36 monitors, infrared hand scanner. It was the penultimate, hey, you're doing a live event. What cool thing can you throw into this? And I was like, oh, I want to work with infrared. I want to learn how to manage that. And I want to sync up all these screens together. And they had such a cool vision and they're really cool to partner with. So, which is kind of crazy to think about because it was Nike, I figured it'd be more bureaucratic, but they were all into everything. So yeah, that was awesome.
No, that's really cool because see, you worked for you did some work with Nike, right? Which is a huge organization. Yeah. And as a developer, you don't really get that recognition from the public facing side. And I guess that's what this whole podcast is about, right? It's about, identifying the work that goes on behind the scenes to make those products happen and make those dreams a reality for people like Nike, who wanted to have that huge show and put on that huge demonstration, right? What goes on behind the scenes? What makes that happen? And I guess that's what we're trying to accomplish here on the podcast, right? To make, people understand what the developer goes through on a day-to-day basis. It's not always, go, go, go. I mentioned a semicolon and it's not a joke, right? You can have thousands of lines of code, that's not compiling, that's not running, because you missed one semicolon in line 30, right? So, you know, it takes a lot of, focus. And you know, when you get into the vibe of things when you're coding, you don't always catch those things right away, right? Because personal experience, when I'm coding, you know, I'm not going to stop there and compile every single line of code I write, right? I'm going to write a function, write a variable, and then I'll run it maybe, you know, half an hour later, and it might or might not run, right? And that's kind of the gist of it, and that's kind of what we go through on a day-to-day basis. So your most recent project, what problem does that project solve? What's the tech stack you used to build it? And in what did you face any challenges while building it?
So I've got a few projects that I'm working on, and I think front end stack, I always try to use the same thing. So I like React Next with TypeScript. It's, I think everybody uses Vercel these days, unless you're building for like a corporation, and you need to build like on AWS, which is the standard. But even then, I digress a little bit, but a lot of corporations are going to on-prem because of the cost of cloud. But as far as like project-wise, we ended up, so I have an AI agent, because I'm actually for once in my life playing into a narrative. We were building it before the AI agent narrative came out, and then I was like, oh, it's an actual AI agent that does some sentiment analysis of four different social platforms, and it does some chart analysis, and then we're setting up the Twitter side of things. And I'm working with some cool people that are doing that. But one that's been really interesting is I have a token launch pad called Edge. So that's the partner we're working with. It's on a weird coding language chain. They use it their own. The chain's not weird, but the coding language is weird. It's called Scripto. It's like a Rust native language. So it's kind of like coding on Solana. But their whole thing is security. And so, I mean, that was what interested me in like working on that chain originally. I was like, the background, obviously, I mentioned earlier in security. And it's been, there's a lot of nuances. So anytime you're trying to learn a new language, coding is coding, right? Like once you learn one language and you figure out, you like get that mindset, you can pick up on other things, but you need to learn the nuances, right? And that always takes time. And so with this chain that we were working on, there were a lot of nuances, and I've been really lucky to work with some communities like SteamX, like you guys, and that community where I can have people I can talk with. That's not true in a lot of communities, right? Like if you code on Polygon, like there's a bajillion people on Polygon, and they're only going to talk to you if you've already got the volume. But if you code on some of like chains like SteamExchange or Radix is this chain that I'm talking about, like you can go and find devs that are willing to chat with you, and even sometimes talk with the founders because they're just excited to have you on board. And that's not true everywhere. So like find a chain like that is what I always tell people. Find one where the people are actually accessible and they care about you, or at least enough to help you and chat with you, right? And so I've worked with a lot of chains in the past, and like there's a reason I'm doing, you know, this podcast here and chatting with you, right? It's been years. So but no, yeah. For sure.
And I definitely agree with that, right? And I think that at some point you've even spoken with, you know, our lead blockchain dev who speaks with nobody. Mm-hmm. So I think
yeah.
Definitely speaks volume. So cool. So the just a couple more questions for you. I don't want to keep you too long.
That's right.
So decentralization. So we're seeing everything kind of shift from being decentralized to being centralized, or at least halfway centralized. How do you see the future of decentralized apps? Will they evolve to kind of fit that mold, or will they continue and hold strong?
So the DAO narrative died, right? And I think there will be eventually some true DAOs that pop up. But what I think is going to end up happening is Ethereum is the chain right now, but it's not scalable in its current form, right? It needs to either acquire the Arbitrum Foundation and Arbitrum. But I mean, cost alone is enough for you to like look at Ethereum and try to scale it, and it just doesn't make sense. I don't want to get into the weeds of it. With dApps, I agree. There's always some level of centralization. That's because you need to be able to pay the people that work on these, right? The idea that things are decentralized is awesome, and the open source is great. I love it. But how do the people continue to work on it without making money, right? There needs to be a financial incentive. We have bills to pay. Everybody needs to eat. And so I think if there's a model that changes where we actually see true decentralization of funds in the treasury, which the initial team won't be incentivized to do, right? Like even if we look at Ethereum, and I bring them up again, because if you look at Vitalik has a lot of money, right? And he's done a very good job of keeping Ethereum relatively decentralized. That's an argument that we can have on another day or discussion. But I think we're going to see the centralization actually become more of an issue if you don't like it, especially as banks start to get more involved, right? People are talking about XRP, and there's some pilot programs going on with some banks that are not very public with XRP. And as soon as the banks and institutions start to get involved, I mean, look at Bitcoin and MicroStrategy, yep. right? Like he is controlling Bitcoin. Yeah, that is his ultimate goal. So it can, like, I think of that meme where you're holding up a sign like, Michael Saylor controls Bitcoin, convince me otherwise, right? Like, that's eventually what we're going to have. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just how it goes. The people with money buy into the things that are going to make them more money. It's why in the US, I think regulation will be good. So I don't think the Wild West is great. And that'll help get us a little bit towards more decentralization. But as long as you can access and get a piece of the pie as a consumer, you're winning. Right, like we are still very early. We're going to be very early for another decade, at a minimum. No matter what anybody tells you, this tech is got leaps and bounds to go before it's in every single device in the entire world. Because it will be, just like cloud. This is the inevitable. So the decentralized piece is important, but it's not as important as making sure we're using the tech the right way, which we're not doing yet. Right, like monkey JPEGs are cool. And a new chain popping up and then getting hype and fizzling out is great. But the chains that stay here and have a clear narrative and are building towards something, that's where you should be placing your bets on. Because those are the ones that are going to be around long term. They'll be doing the right things like real estate, healthcare, GameFi, things like that, I think are all going to be mainstays for blockchain. And that'll make it go a little bit more mainstream.
For sure. And you know, I think that the person who thought of calling it Web3, you know, because we have Web2, which is the internet, and calling it Web3, which is the evolution of the internet. I think that nailed it. I think that narrative is what's going to help drive it into that decade milestone of becoming the normal, right? I think it 100%. Is inevitable. I agree. I think that everyone will eventually be using Web3 in some form or fashion. I guess it'll just take someone or some people or teams to kind of roll it up in a way that's consumable. Because right now it's not, in the sense you have to download wallets, you have to download apps, you got to on-ramp. I think that's eventually it'll be rolled up in a way where it's just normal, right? It's just day-to-day. As an end user, as a consumer, you don't really have to do anything to access Web3 except access it. So I think that day is coming. Like you mentioned, it's probably not coming anytime soon, but we are going to get there eventually, I think.
Yeah. And there's tech out there that does it. And a good example of like GameFi is always going to be, I think, the gateway because so many people play games. And we've seen the NFL game by Mythical Games. I can't remember the name of it, but it's on mobile. And the NFL Rivals. People didn't even know that was on chain, right? Like if you go and play NFL Rivals, you'll have no idea that's an on-chain game. And they've done such a good job of encapsulating it. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. But to get there, we need to go from step one. And step one is make the things good, make it so that you can at least use it while it grows, and then we'll figure out how to encapsulate that Web3 component the same way we do cloud. You don't care that we use the cloud, you shouldn't care that you use the blockchain, but the value of the technology is going to be yours to use as the end user. So hopefully that makes the argument for decentralization as not being super important, but it is important, right? Because if it does become too decentralized or too centralized, then you won't get that value that we originally all saw in blockchain.
Oh, for sure. And you know what, like just to touch back on GameFi, right? And you nailed it with that example is like eventually Web3 is going to become a technology that you don't even know you're using, right? It's just going to be normal, right?
Exactly.
For example, like you said, you're playing that game, you don't even know what's on blockchain. Similarly, we're developing Mobsters. We're developing it in a way where you don't really even know you're on the blockchain, but all the progress, all the databases, all the player metrics are all, you know, on blockchain. So definitely those...
That.
Yeah, so those are the steps that we, you know, everyone developing in this space has to start taking, right? Like, yeah, it's really cool to be 100% on blockchain, you know, generate those fees, whatever you have to do. But eventually, if we want mass adoption and if we want the entire ecosystem to kind of succeed, we have to start kind of thinking in a way where, you know, this doesn't feel normal. Let's try to make it feel more normal in the sense that, you know, the user shouldn't have to feel like they're doing something new, right? So that kind of leads me to my last question for you, and it's one that I'm going to ask every developer that comes on the show. What advice would you give someone starting out in blockchain development?
Just jump in. Like, there's a lot of people have come into blockchain development with trepidation, and I mean, there's definitely going to be learning curves, but pick a project that you want to make. It's what I tell you no matter what you're trying to learn. find something you want to make and then make it. Go through the trials and tribulations of like making mistakes and not knowing what you're doing. An example of this is like, so I, not many people know this. I don't talk about it that often, but I do bring it up every now and then. I had a like handyman business, and I said I did everything except electric. I had no idea what I was doing. I would just say yes to the jobs, and then I would YouTube them, right? Like, that's what I did to pay for college, well, like, along with some of the dev stuff. I take that into everything when I want to learn it. It's like, if I'm going to say I want to build this, there's nothing that's going to stop me from making it. I'll figure out how to do it. And if you can go into it with that mindset, knowing that there's, you're going to have to go over those hurdles, and it's going to be a, like, you're going to run into a brick wall, find people you can ask, but also learn how to look it up. And now we have AI, that's become so much easier. And then the only other thing is I'd say, figure out the way you like to learn. For me, like, I can read it. I'm very, very lucky because I get to read and I absorb from reading. I recommend everybody to try Udemy. I love Udemy. And any of those free course platforms, there's YouTube courses galore. If you find a chain that has documentation, just go through it and read it when you want to do something on it. Right. But it's going to be a data dump. You're not going to remember things, and that's okay. Yep. Just slam your face at it and you'll get better over time. So
for sure. My advice for people is always to, you know, think of something small, right? Think of a small goal you want to accomplish and then work on that. Right. And you nailed it, right? ChatGPT is a great place to start because there's so much data from other developers using ChatGPT and inserting data into that model where you can just say, hey, write me a smart contract to, you know, manage a token, for example, right? And it'll give you a short, you know, Open Zeppelin pre-audited smart contract that will be your baseline. And then you can go and you can figure out how it's coded. You can learn the language. You can try to replicate it. And then you can start adding functionality to it. So I think that there's so many tools today that we didn't have, you know, even a year ago or even 2 years ago, that definitely make life a lot easier. And it's huge. It's an amazing time for people to get into blockchain, you know, adopt it, you know, embrace Web3, because it is going to be the future. So if you are working in, you know, IT teams and project teams and software management teams, eventually all of that's going to be Web3. So now is the best time, very early on when things are so new, to kind of learn and grow with it.
Yeah, no, 100%. And there's times you brought up ChatGPT. There's times where I'll be looking at something and I talked about working on another, like a new chain. I'll bring it in there and I'll ask, like, you don't know everything. And no matter where you are, tech moves so fast, you're always behind. So I don't shy away from saying, I don't know this. And originally, I would look it up or I'd go to try to find developers. First thing I do is see if the AI knows. And then you can fact check it, right? Because most of the AIs don't know. So just always fact check it. And then you want to get into the community and be able to riff with some people as well. So don't just use AI. I think AI is a great starting point. 100% agree. And then if you can ingrain yourself in one of the communities and become a mainstay of that community, you'll not only like learn at an exponential rate, you'll also gain a following, right? And you'll get some friends. So hopefully for a long term.
For sure. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for your time, man. I appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy. Definitely want to do this again with you.
Yeah, for sure. And I'd love to have you on some of the stuff that I do as well. I've got questions about some of the stuff that you guys are doing. So let me know if you've got some availability coming up.
For sure. Looking forward to it, man. Up next, we have a special segment for you guys. It's going to feature two people that you guys talk to every single day. It's going to feature one mod and one admin, and they're going to go through some questions about what they go through on a day-to-day basis, how they manage the group, how they deal with scammers, how they deal with FUDders, how they deal with whatever they have to deal with, using the tools and the bots that they've implemented and they've created to make their lives easier. Let's get it. All right, so we have a special segment right now. We have one of the most fan favorite admins of our channel. We have Mr. Mark. Mark, how are you?
I'm not so bad, thanks to you.
Pretty good, man. Thank you. Thank you. So before we get into all the other juicy questions, I guess first and foremost, let's introduce yourself and share how you got involved being an admin for us.
It was a long time ago. I'm Mark, one of the admins in the Steam Exchange. And I can't remember the date because I've got a bad memory. It was a long time ago. And I used to do modding on the Binance Smart Chain group on Facebook. And I was looking at different crypto projects and came across Neville & Co. And got into the group and everything and started chatting amongst each other. And I've got a few groups which are modding anyway. So it just become so easy to join the team. And I had a call with Pete. Pete went through a few things. And it was everything that I wanted out of a crypto project.
I had to be involved. I remember that. I remember you mentioning the Facebook group and you even connected us with the guy that ran that group at some point.
230,000 people in there, it was absolutely made away with scammers. It was it was too hard.
That was warm up.
I mean, I deal with I've got about five groups now at the moment on Facebook. And a lot of the groups have only got sort of 6,000-7,000, but you can place a bet that 2,000 plus are scammers. And I go through thousands of profiles, and I find anyone, because they're local groups, so I find anyone who's not local or in the country. I can't mention which countries, but they're all over the place. So I just go through the whole lot, and it's nuts out there, and it's getting worse, isn't it? As obviously you know, sitting here for 3 years doing this, so many scammers on every platform.
And we're going to get into them. So,
I can imagine.
So as a moderator, admin, one of our top admins, what's a day like for you? So, you know, obviously we've never asked you or never expected you to wake up in the morning and, you know, live, breathe Steam Exchange. So what does a day look like for you as an admin?
Well, originally when I first started, you know what it's like when you start something and obviously you don't know what's expected of you and so on. I was sort of, every minute of the day I could get in, I was there. I was there in the daytime while I was working. I was dinner times, break times, night times till 11 o'clock at night. And then that's how you start meeting the community, obviously, and that's how you get to know people and get to know more about the project. And I just didn't think it was sort of right for me to be answering questions if I didn't know the answers, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So the best thing is just to get as much info as you possibly could. And that was obviously how we started. And it was just a case of, you know, finding out what you guys were doing. And obviously things evolve as well. So every day is a new learning day. And yeah, that's the typical day. Start up in the morning before I go to work.
And then you and Ice, I guess, your buddy, your best friend Ice, were the initiators.
He's been here three times now.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. So you guys kind of initiated the, hey, can we sign an NDA and get information so we know what to kind of talk about? So how did that come to be? Not that we minded give you guys an NDA and giving you guys information, but it kind of came out of nowhere, if I recall correctly. So how did that come to be, I guess? Yeah, I guess you guys had a conversation. So how did that go?
I mean, the sort of worst thing about it was that we couldn't say anything. And obviously you're excited about things that come in, and obviously you talked to us about what was in the future, another 6-7 months down the line, and you literally have to keep it to yourself. But I think really you spill most of it in the chat than we do.
Oh man, you know, here's the thing, right? So when you're building something, and you know, I'll be honest with you, here's my little secret. So if I'm coding something and I hit a snag or I hit a bug, and it takes me forever to kind of clear that bug, so we have an interview as well with Aaron, a developer interview, and he kind of said the same thing. Like, you get really happy and really excited when you overcome those bugs. So, you know, when I finally get through them, you know, I just have to share it. I can't really, you know, keep it to myself. I have to tell somebody. And, you know, you guys are, you know, there, and the correct process should be, I should be telling you guys first, but sometimes things go straight to the chat.
That happened last week. You told us, and about 2 minutes later, you went to chat and told everybody else.
Yeah, you know, it's...
And what?
I guess the thing is, like, you know, our relationship with the community has evolved big time, right? I think from where we started to where we are today, like the people that are in the community, in the chat that are there, you know, it's it's become more like a family, right? And I guess
there's
some things, of course, that we can't share to the community right away, which is painful, right? Especially, I'll give you one really good one that maybe I shouldn't have spoken about so early was the exchange listings, right? So, you know, we have these exchange listings paid for. They have all the infrastructure information. They have access to some of our infrastructure, but still, you know, they haven't integrated. So when I said it in the chat, I was expecting within a couple of weeks, you know, we would be listed on these exchanges, but here we are, right? And we're still not listed. So it definitely backfires sometimes. And, you know, I do kind of kick myself for it, but, you know, I still think it's important that we're open and transparent with the community.
You did open all up all the when questions though.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that's all we get now.
Yeah. There you go. And then you have to deal with that. So I apologize.
It happens, doesn't it? I know what you mean. It's your little baby, really, isn't it? So,
yeah, and that's the thing, right? I think like, you know, myself, Chris, you know, we're kind of working on this full time, right? We're not really doing anything else. So, you know, for us, it's about kind of showing and demonstrating, you know, what we go through on a day to day basis. So I think it's exciting that we do share things, but again, like I mentioned, there's some things I shouldn't share so early.
Yeah, I suppose.
let's change the pace, right? So there's two questions I'm going to ask you. The first one is a very serious one, and the second one is not so serious. So which one do you want to start with first?
Go with the serious one.
All right, this is a good one.
I mean, I'm not normally in a serious mood, but you know.
This one might raise your blood pressure, so I apologize in advance.
See you in a bit then.
So what's your approach when you handle FUD and spammers and scammers in the chat?
Well, originally, obviously, the sort of thing was when you're sort of new to this, you sort of try and shut it down and try and turn it around and stuff. But nowadays, the community's that good. They literally jump in before you get a chance anymore. And they sort of, they're investors like it, all of us. So they sort of jump in quite quick nowadays. So we don't really have to combat it that much. But obviously, when it first started, it was tough. I mean, I remember that first launch was absolutely, it was a nightmare.
Yeah. And then people don't know this, but so we have different chats, right? So we have a NDA chat with our admins, and then we have a mod chat with the mods. So I remember at the time, I guess even up until more recently, not so recent, but you know, as soon as there would be some kind of FUD or some kind of scam, you would go in the chat and say cheeky bugger or something creative like that.
Me?
And,
I think you must have the wrong person.
Maybe I have the wrong Brit here, right?
Must be.
Yeah, so definitely, like your passion for dealing with that, and I think more important than dealing with the actual event itself is the aftermath, right? So you take a lot of care in making sure that we help the person that's been scammed, right?
Definitely.
I know that you know, it's not always easy to address these things right away. Like, we can definitely address what was exploited and how the person was attacked or scammed, but I guess remedying it isn't always an immediate thing. So you're really good at being on top of saying, hey, Nev, this person hasn't been, you know, made whole yet or whatnot, even though you know that we're going to work on it eventually. But you really care about that person being made whole.
It's tough, which is, obviously, yeah.
Which is huge,
when
right?
you see the, yeah, it is, yeah.
And you don't realize it from your perspective, but from my perspective, what that shows me is that the relationship you've developed with this community and your peers, your co-admins and mods, it's grown beyond just your job, right? Or your role.
Yeah, it has. It's, I can't believe it, obviously, how the community's come on, and I keep saying it. I mean, you might think I'm joking, but it is the best community that I've dealt with. They've just, everything about it, and you obviously you're in DMs with everybody, and they're all like friends as well, which is nice to see, because it doesn't always go that sweetly, does it? You know, in other groups and stuff, it never goes that sweet. Which,
I've never
seen
a Telegram community like ours, to be honest.
I haven't.
I'm in a few communities. I'm in lounges.
There's no bias there. It's just, yeah.
It's just people just talking shop all day. But in our community, people are literally talking about their day-to-day. They're talking about, you know, different topics. It's not just about, you know, the project. It's literally become a place where people can come and just chat and just get some, you know, time done with for the day. You know, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I did find it funny at the start because we were talking about football and obviously your job and things like what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. And some people sort of came in who hadn't been in the community and sort of, what's this? Is this just about football? Or is this just about... because they didn't know that people spent hours in there just chatting and obviously, you know, having a laugh or doing game, anything, because it was such a good community. And I haven't seen another one like that.
Yeah, the biggest one is the games, right? I guess people come in and see them playing games all day, especially that guy, Rob. Doesn't stop playing games, right?
I still haven't forgiven him because I can't beat any of his scores anymore. Not as I have time, obviously. That's what.
No,
it is.
I was spoiled when we first put that game bot, the gamey in the chat. Like I was finding myself, like, you know, if I was getting too frustrated building or coding something or I couldn't get through, I would just start playing games, and it became such a bad habit. I had to stop myself. So to the point where I think we removed it at one point because
we did actually stop
me from playing it. So it's back and full force. So I apologize for people who don't like people enjoying their time, but we have a gaming.
I must admit though, I did cheat once. I had my son. And he was playing the game for me. Man. He was better than me. And he got a big score for a bit.
Yeah, but, Rob, you know, any game that you're not number one and Mark won, it was his son.
I haven't got any good scores anymore. I'm totally rubbish. Yeah, it's one of them things.
I mean, you control the bot. You can always just reset it, you know?
Yeah, that's true. that might reset the post count, though. I'm still over 70k.
I might reset that sometime. Speaking of bots, though, right? We have a bunch of bots that we use every day. Some that people see and some that people don't. So yourself and Ice and Liquid have gone way above and beyond. I think Ice even created a bot for some of our use cases. So tell us about some of those bots that people don't see and how we use them or how you use them to make your...
We've got the admin bot, which is absolutely brilliant because that's the one that I sorted out. And then, God, we must have five, six.
You sorted it, so it's brilliant. Got it.
And obviously, we've also got the group where we test all the bots to see if they're going to be any use in the group. Sometimes they're not, obviously, but sometimes, especially the name change, Sang Matter, that's good because it literally tells you when somebody comes in and changes the name to one of us. So when you see, Mark, somebody's changed his name to Mark.
Or they get creative and change the name to Kia, and then I ban the real one. Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yes, I do. Yeah, I mean, I banned Ice out of the mod chat once, but that was just by mistake. I think, it was mistake. Honestly. It's nice to have these things at your sort of disposal because... obviously, you can't be in the chat every minute of the day. And sometimes I'm just sitting there at brew time and I'll look and I'll go, somebody's changed the name. I'll go back and I'll check the profile and go, uh-oh. And then I'll realise that it's a scammer or they've sent something with the banned words. We must have probably 10,000 banned words now. Every single project. Trump isn't on everything now at the moment. TrumpX, blah, blah, blah. NFTs, this, that, and the other. It's nuts at the moment.
Yeah.
It's the same stuff, though, isn't it? It's the same things all the time. And now the main website chat and everyone I answer is the same message. And I put straight to the same message. I just put, are we going there? And then I wait to see if they do. I just send them the same message back again.
I was meaning to remove that. I promised you that I'd remove it.
Yeah, I know. I just went in just to see what was going on, and then I got engrossed with it again and then started answering all the scammers, and there must have been about 30 of the same message but in a slightly different way. I'm new to this. Wow. I've got some money in my Zelle account and blah, blah, blah.
It's crazy how the scams have evolved, right, over the years as well.
I know.
Before there was not really like Drainer scams and whatnot. Before it was more social engineering, right? Now it's kind of like click this link and you're done, right? So it's
Careful. It's kind of scary, isn't it? How it's moved on. all those things have moved on. But yeah, when I first started, it was more about like putting the, you know, when they join and it comes up with a message and you put the other contract addresses, blah, 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 that sort of stuff. And people would be waiting for a launch and go, oh, contract address. And they just literally copy and send it to the wrong person. There was so much of that going on at the time.
Yep.
It was mad because of the hype around every launch.
Yep, and mad. It's created with the username as bio.
Yeah,
and
but then people never turned off the chat just before they were going to launch, which it was just, well, suicide really, isn't it? Everybody just, they posted that many scams. It was awful. I mean, yeah, we've all been done by different things and you learn by your mistakes.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, I feel like one of the, aside from everything else, I think one of the best things that we do as a team and as a project is help investors that's been scammed, at least on our network.
Yeah.
So I think that being able to intervene and help them recover their funds is definitely something we're proud of.
It's really nice to sort of get the thanks after and just say, oh, you don't know what it means to me and that sort of stuff. And it does, it means a lot to us as well. Because, you know, everybody's been scammed and you know how it feels. It's the worst feeling in the world. So obviously if it was your money that you thought you were going to sort of invest and make something out of and some horrible, well, I won't swear, but yeah, person taken all your money, it's horrible.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that the way we handle it is, though sometimes it takes longer than it should, I mean, I say should lightly because no one else does this for anybody.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Sometimes it takes us longer to kind of get things resolved for people, but at the end of the day, they're made whole, even if it comes at a personal cost, right? So there's a lot of times where, you know, we couldn't fully restore a user's funds, so we did it out of pocket, right? So I'm gonna let you steal one of Ice's stories. But he has to think of something new for when I interview him. Do you remember the time when a scammer, I guess, scammed somebody and they tried to transfer out their tokens, but we blacklisted them in a way? And then I convinced them that they had to buy SteamX in order to transfer their tokens, and the scammer actually did it. So I remember the scammer bought like $10 or $15 of the SteamX using Crossrail, and then they essentially couldn't do anything with it. So I answered it, but the question was, do you have any funny or memorable stories about foiling a scammer? So that was a funny story, definitely, and we took it from Ice, so he has to think of something new.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember a few sort of people, obviously, when they try and contact you. And one person, you know, when they used to obviously come in and then clone an admin.
Oh, yeah.
I remember someone who cloned me and by mistake sent me a message to ask if it was in SteamX. And I could see that it was the same icon as me. And then I was just going to reply back, and they must have realised and they deleted it, and I couldn't do anything about it. Yeah. I was gutted. I was like, oh, I wasn't quick enough. But I also told one person who was, you know, when we found all the groups, that when they cloned a group and made I told one person in there that we had bots, which if they sent us a message, that we could bypass VPNs and we could find the locations. And literally after about 10 seconds of that, he just blocked me.
Yeah.
But I was like, I was just thinking the most ridiculous thing I could think of. And it would literally took 10 seconds and he blocked me. And I went, ah, oh, damn.
Yeah. But lots of fun stuff that we go through.
Yeah. It's just not, obviously, it's not nice. And you see these groups and I hate them with a passion. That's why I go on searches every now and again. And I just go and try find groups. And then if I join and then he comes up with obviously the message, I change my name and my other account to this is a scam group. And then I just keep joining. So it just keeps putting down in a row, this is a scam group. It's just all you want to do is stop somebody going in, isn't it?
Yeah. And I know Virav, when he was here, he opened a whole bunch of groups to avoid other people from being able to open those groups. So that definitely helped.
Yeah, because I thought that was one of the scams. And I told you once there's a group, said, oh, no. And you told me what it was. But I thought that was a scam group. But yeah, I remember.
Yeah,
we had loads of groups. It's
proactive stuff that we do that makes our lives easier, I guess, at the end of the day. So I have one last question for you, Mark. And you need to answer this as honestly as possible, okay? Who's your favorite?
Yeah.
Mir Chris. Who is it? Mir Chris.
Sorry, you're breaking up. I think the AirPods are going off.
I said, who's your favorite? Me or Chris?
No, still getting nothing, mate. it's Pete anyway, so.
Oh, my goodness. He wasn't even a choice. You know, you're not the first person. So, you know, I've asked this person this question before, and I've gotten Pete before as well. So, thank you. Thank you for answering honestly. Now I know who my favorite admin is.
Well, you know your place now.
Yeah. Anyways, Mark, thank you so much for your time. I know it's super late for you.
Fine.
I know when I have ice on what his answer is going to be, so it's okay. I know who my favorite admin is now.
Right. Okay. It's been nice knowing you anyway.
All right, brother. Take care. Thank you so much.
All right. See you later. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you for tuning in this far. It's now time for the moment most of you are waiting for, aside from hearing our voices and aside from hearing the stories, the giveaways.
It's giveaway time, where we reward your loyalty with SteamX and maybe a little bragging rights. Let's pick some winners.
All right, here we go. So all the winners were drawn using RailsSlide, so you can confirm these transactions on the blockchain itself. I will provide you with the session IDs. All right, first up for the fifth prize, which was 5 winners, each winning $100 worth of SteamX, not locked, not vested. Here we go. Winner number 1, wallet address starting with 6115 and ending with 4598. Winner 2, wallet starting with B879. Ending with 4D66. Winner 3, wallet starting with 9B75, ending with 9E0F. Winner number 4, wallet starting with 9E67, ending with 96B3. And lastly, winner 5, wallet starting with C3B3 and ending with 71CB. Congratulations to all winners. Your funds will be sent out immediately. Up next, we have 2 lucky winners winning $250 worth of SteamX that's locked for 3 months in Rails Locker. Winner number 1, wallet address starting with 21A2 and ending with 936F. And winner number 2, wallet starting with EEFE and ending with 8355. Congratulations. I will drop your Rails Locker address in the chat shortly. Next up, we have 2 winners who won $500 worth of SteamX, locked for 3 months, and then vested for 9 months in Rails Locker. Winner number 1, address starting with 0523 and ending with 764A. Winner number 2, address starting with 7CA1 and ending with 16FF. Congratulations. And next up, we have 2 winners who won $750 worth of SteamX locked for 12 months in Rails Locker. Winner number 1, wallet address starting with 9C5A and ending with AEE6. Winner number 2, address starting with 5C05 and ending with 8542. Congratulations, guys. And finally, the grand prize, a 100% match. Up to $3,000 locked for 12 months. This person got the full $3,000. Address starting 8F10, ending with F334. You can validate these giveaways by going to slide.steamexchange.io and using session ID numbers 26, 27, 28, and 29. Congratulations to all winners. So what's next for Rails Network? Well, Chris talked about our ecosystem, talked about our recalibration process. I took you through the history of Steam Exchange and what it took to get us to this point. For 2025, we have 2 main goals. The first one is Rails Wallet. Rails Wallet's going to have something super special. It's going to have chain-level multi-factor authentication. The way it works is, when you set up your wallet for the first time, you're not only presented with a seed phrase, you're also presented with a backup code. Once you register that backup code on that device will now be your master device. Any other device, whether you set the wallet up on a tablet or you use the web extension, that's going to be your secondary device. The secondary device can still trade, process transaction, do transfers, but the kicker is, in order for that trade to be finalized or that transfer to be finalized, you need to authorize that transaction from your master device. This is not financial advice. Don't actually do this. You can literally tattoo your seed phrase to your forehead. Don't do it. And not worry about being drained. Not worry about being scammed. Because in order for transactions to go through, you need to authorize it with your primary device. Just like you protect your seed phrase, make sure you protect your backup code. Because if you lose your phone dies on you, your PC's not working, for whatever reason, you need to change your primary device. That backup code, in addition to your seed phrase, will be required to register a new primary device. But don't worry, as soon as you revoke authorization from the blockchain for that wallet will no longer function. What that means is that no transfers, no trades, nothing can take place until you register a new primary device. And this ties directly into goal number two for 2025, our non-custodial centralized exchange. Rails Exchange will rely heavily on Rails Wallet. The reason for this is due to the non-custodial nature of the exchange, the only EVM-compatible wallet that will be supported by the exchange is Rails Wallet. Because of all the security functionality, because of the 2FA at a chain level, we want to make sure that when you're using the exchange, you're just as protected on the centralized side as you are on the decentralized side. And just because it's a non-custodial exchange doesn't mean you're not going to have the same experience using Rails Exchange as you would your favorite exchange. Charting tools, market trading, limit orders, DCA options, leverage options, anything that will make your life as an investor and as a trader easier, Rails Exchange is going to have. And if you're a project owner, don't think we forgot about you. As a project ourselves, we've experienced so many issues using centralized exchanges until we settled on one. Some of the issues that we had was, you know, I want to pay through crypto. I want to set up payroll. I want to set up benefits. I want to set up HR. I want to set up authority. I want to make sure that if anything were to happen to me or my partners, or whether it's a personal account or a business account, that there's a beneficiary functionality available on the exchange. That's going to be there as well. Set up your payroll, pay your developers, pay your employees, all in crypto, all through the exchange. And the most important part is it's 100% non-custodial. What that means is we never get access to your crypto. You never transfer funds to the exchange itself. There's no hot wallets, cold wallets. There's none of that intermediary stuff. The only thing that you need to worry about is protecting your seed phrase and your backup code for Rails Wallet. So what makes 2025 so different than 2021? Well, we've gained a ton of experience as a team. Our developers are very seasoned and very well-versed with our infrastructure and our blockchain. And we've really honed down on the processes for handling incidents, handling problems, and dealing with bugs that we've encountered. And to make this dream a reality for 2025, we're hiring 4 new developers to join our existing 11 developer team. The purpose of these 4 developers is 2 of them are going to have direct experience developing exchanges, and 2 of them are going to have direct experience building out wallets. Working with their respective teams, we're going to build out these tools, test them out, get them into audit, get them into QA, and get them ready for public use. That all sounds good for 2025, right? But the most important step is getting our regulatory approval. This step will require a very careful, a very well thought out application to our regulatory body or any other regulatory body around the world, wherever that may be, to give us an exemption or to give us an approval to operate in their jurisdiction. And that's a plan. But just because we're waiting for regulatory approval does not mean that the tools will not go online. We still plan to put the tools online on testnet first, but with an added caveat of a trading competition. The way the trading competition is going to work is you register your Rails wallet to the exchange, you go through the process of KYC like you would on a normal exchange, and then you're given testnet currency. That testnet currency can then be used to execute trades on the exchange for whatever pairs we have listed, using the market, limit, leverage, the charting tools, familiarizing yourself with the ecosystem and the tool itself, and your outcome or your resulting net position will be your leaderboard position. So the person or the people that have the most positive trade, the best P&L, they'll be rewarded on mainnet when the time comes. But just because you're not the best trader in the world doesn't mean you won't be rewarded on mainnet. This is going to be in the form of an airdrop. So everyone that participated in Rails Exchange on testnet will be rewarded with an airdrop pre-calculated based on the amount of transactions you've done, based on the volume you did on the exchange on testnet, how well you did with your P&L. And once mainnet goes live, it'll be converted into a reward for use on Rails Exchange. So yeah, remember that original vision? Well, this is a full circle moment. After all these years, we're finally gearing up to finish the exchange and get a regulatory approval. The difference is, this time, we're backed by a powerhouse of a DeFi ecosystem that we built from the ground up. Like Chris mentioned, we have Rails Network, we have our DEX, we have CrossRails, we have our Launchpad, we have our Locker, we have Rails Slide. Everything you need as a DeFi trader, developer, or project owner to trade with confidence and to trade with reliability. So, if you've ever thought about building something big, whether it's a business, a project, or even just a crazy idea, just know this. It's never a straight line. You're going to hit roadblocks, you're going to have to take some detours, and maybe even have to do a total reset. But as long as you keep moving forward, you'll find the right path. For us, that path led us to Rails Network and our DeFi ecosystem. And trust me, we're just getting started. And that's a wrap on the deep dive into the history of Steam Exchange and episode 1 of Rails Network, Whoever Said It Would Be Easy Lied. If you've made it this far, first off, major props to you. You're officially part of the inner circle that knows exactly what goes into developing a blockchain and developing on the blockchain by developers inside the Rails Network ecosystem and outside the Rails Network ecosystem. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on your notifications so you don't miss the next one. Trust me, we've got a lot more to unpack. One more thing. Before we go, we want to include you into the conversation. So that's why we're introducing a new segment for the next episode called Inbox Unchained. Yeah, we're working on the name, don't worry about it. But basically, every episode, we're going to pull a random DM from our community and answer it right here on the show. If you've got a burning question about Rails Network, curious about blockchain, want to know what my favorite pizza topping is, it's not pineapple, send me a DM, send the admins or modder DM, reach out to us on X, whatever you got to do to get that DM in, and we're going to answer it and feature it on the next episode. Thank you for tuning in. As always, keep building and please keep asking questions. Take care.
We're calling it a day on this episode. Remember, life's the block. Stack it wisely. See you soon.